Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
What's happening, guys? Happy Wednesday, and I'm glad that you all are joining us for another very special episode of Your Welcome. Today's show is brought to you by the good folks over at BetDSI.com. Guys, if there's any major world or sporting event that you want to get action on, go to BetDSI.com. Use the promo code CHAEL25. They will give you $25 just for signing up. If you make a deposit after that, they will give you a 200% bonus on your deposit. These guys have been in business over 20 years. They score an A-plus on sports review sites. They have a mobile app. They have 24/7, 365 customer service, and they have made a reputation on getting your money fast and easy. Go to BetDSI.com. Use the promo code CHAEL25 and enjoy. Jacob, what's happening, my man?
What's happening with you?
Good weekend?
Yeah.
You know, D.B. Cooper died.
D.B. Cooper, isn't that the hijacker dude?
The real D.B. Cooper, yes. The real D.B. Cooper died. So I've told this story, and I've taken great delight in my knowledge of the case and of knowing who the real D.B. Cooper is. I've never revealed his name, and I don't know that I will, but I do have a little bit more to this story. So it has often surprised me that I have made the claim that I know D.B. Cooper, and that nobody ever contacted me. Now, I wouldn't have shared with them any information, but it did surprise me that they didn't know. And the FBI over time has pointed the finger at several different people, but they finally did settle in on a guy. The guy had done a bank robbery. The cops were chasing him. They ended up in a shootout. He was shot and killed. And they said, oh, and by the way, subsequently, that's the guy that was D.B. Cooper. We've been building the case for some time, but we never able to bring it forward. This case is closed. However, they never really closed it. They then went in different directions. I mean, most recently, they've got a tie, and they found some kind of fibers on the tie that could only be produced at some kind of a space development manufacturing place. So they thought maybe he would work for Boeing. They never really closed it, even though they say they do. And you have to understand, the FBI is very known for this, and this isn't a bad thing or a conspiracy, but to explain to you how this works, when they have a case of this magnitude that they can't solve, they've only got three options. And one of them is to say, hey, we haven't solved it, we're still looking into it. The other one is to say, we haven't solved it and we're done looking into it. Now, that one you can't do, because that would motivate a criminal to know over a certain period of time, I can just get away. So the third option, and the one they often default to when they don't know and enough time has gone by and enough resources have been spent and they do need to move on, is to say, well, the person that did it is now deceased, so this is the case closed. We can't accuse him. We can't try him. We can't put him in front of a jury of his peers. But we do have the information, and we're going to move on. That's what they did in this case. However, that was 14 years ago, and they continue to keep bringing it up. So internally, they know it's not solved. I found it weird that nobody's ever asked me, because I do get a tickle in some reverse engineering kind of way of knowing who it is. The real D.B. Cooper has died. But I will give you a piece of backstory or a piece of new information. Though the government and the authorities never did reach out to me to see what it was that I knew, what I was dangling, a major network did, and I'll leave their name out of it, but they said, essentially, if you can put this story together and get an interview with him, here's what we are willing to pay. So I would have been the producer of the event, and I was very interested in it. And don't forget, you know, he left from Portland International Airport, headed to Seattle. So for me to retrace these steps in terms of putting a show together, for me to go to the forest, for me to explain how he landed and how he got out safe, wouldn't take a whole lot more than a camera, because it's right up the road from where we live. So ultimately that culminates with sitting down with him and getting the story. That's the hard part, right? He's never wanted to talk. His own family does not know. He did not come clean to anybody. That's a 99% accurate statement there. So this was in the works, and it's only been in the works briefly. When I made this proposal to him, his participation for saying yes was $100,000. He said, I am not D.B. Cooper. To which I replied, the offer's still good. I'm going to tell the story of what I know. I'm going to take the cameras to the forest. I'm going to take them through PDX. I'm going to retell and reincarnate this story. I'm then going to sit down with you, and you can tell your side, which is simply, I'm not D.B. Cooper. You still get the $100,000. He said no. Now you tell me, Jacob, if I came to you, said I think you're D.B. Cooper, and you say, no, I'm not. I go, well, that's fine. I'm going to turn a camera on. You just say it into the camera, and here's $100,000. You wouldn't even think twice. You'd say, great, okay, right?
Especially correct? If you were innocent. Especially
that's what I'm saying. No, truth. I'm saying yeah. you. If yeah. I came to you, literally, yeah. said, Jacob, I'm going to flip this camera around. I'm going to put it on you. I'm going to lay out the case, everything that I know, everything that I've known since I was 10 years old. And I'm going to ask, are you D.B. Cooper? You can say no. You can say anything you want. You're just going to say it on camera, and I'm going to give you 100 dimes, which is gangster talk, for $100,000. You don't even think twice. You go, sure, go ahead. Bring my wife in here. Bring my dog. Bring anybody you want. Give us all $100,000. Right? Yes or no?
Reasonable, yeah.
Yeah, okay. He said no.
Which means he's probably hiding something.
What? Thank you, Captain Obvious. Why would you possibly turn down $100,000? We were just getting going. They had a $250,000 budget for him. I was just starting the talks. So that's all gone. That all went away. And I just don't find it to be my place to say anything more than that. I mean, what's a name to anybody else? I could say his name here, but he kept his secret. He made it all the way till the end. It's the way that ends.
And
I'm
he,
out.
He went out saying no to the end.
He went out saying no to the end.
With
so,
money in his face.
Yeah, so I'll tell you. So it puts me in a bit of a spot. So there was two shows that influenced this idea, which is why this kind of got off the ground. Two shows. One that our own Tim Kennedy did called Hunting Hitler, where to live with the conspiracy theory that Hitler escaped, did not take cyanide and a bullet to the brain. And so Tim Kennedy went around and was finding different locations that Hitler might have hid out at, why he would hide there, how he would get there, and how he would be protected. It was very fascinating, but at the end, it ends with a big middle finger to the audience because they don't ever find Hitler, right? Well, there's another one, and it's called Finding Escobar's Millions. And the story behind Pablo Escobar, it is believed that at one point he could have been the richest man in the world. You hear the Forbes top 100 list and things like this. Even Forbes had speculated that he may be the world's richest man, but because he made it all in cash and he made it illegally and there was no way to trace it, they had no way to prove it and they couldn't put him in there. But they believed at one point he was holding, and I don't know what they used for evidence in this, but they have a good reputation, so I just accepted it. They believed at one point he was holding $60 billion in $100 bills. So the speculation is, well, this is more than speculation. They were able to prove. One of the things Pablo Escobar did is he just took 100-pound drums and put cash in there, sealed them up, and then went and buried them all over properties because there was no bank. He had so much money, he didn't know where to put it. And this is what he did. He was also known to, some of the properties he was staying at, to put it in between the walls, cover the walls back up with sheetrock or brick or whatever you want to do and move on with his life. So they went to some of these locations that he was at. They got out an excavator. They dug it up. They went into some old properties that he was at that he was known to own or to stay at. They broke all the walls open. They made a 10-part series out of it. But again, big middle finger to the audience because there is no conclusion. They never found a single dollar. So it still made good entertainment, though, which is why I was more than happy to say to this gentleman, the interview will get you the check all the same. I am going to tell the story and what I know. That part I want to disclose to you. In sportsmanship here, I am going to tell what I know that I've never revealed before. I'm going to tell you how I know it, and I'm going to take a camera to the locations. I'm going to tell my side, but then I have to sit down with you. And I'm not going to argue with you. I'm not going to challenge you. This isn't an interrogation. But the fingers point to you, and here's why. and I know this for sure well enough to come out and talk about it on my own show and look like a fool, and here's why. You can then say whatever you want. You get the check and we go our separate ways. He said no. He's not a wealthy man. He's a security guard, minimum wage. God bless him, but he was not a wealthy man. He would not turn down $100,000. I wouldn't think a reasonable person would not. So there's the evidence I present to you, and he has now passed away.
That would actually have made good TV, even if he had said no.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, based on that evidence, because I remember watching one of those Finding Hitler shows.
Right.
And I felt really dumb watching them because I was like, come on, even if this is true, they're not going to show anything like he was right here. I was just like, but I'm having so much fun watching this.
Right. And then put it in a can and it lives down at a network until it airs 8 months later and gets spread over a 3 month season. But CNN and Fox News never found the information. No, exactly. You kind of knew how it was going to end. But at the same time, I'm going, well, maybe there is a different ending because why else would this be on TV? I mean, how do you culminate that? They did this with finding Escobar's millions too. At the end they're like, well, you know, we didn't find the money, but
it still could be out there.
Season two coming up. And it's like, no guys, there's no season two. Okay, you drug me along this journey, I bought into it, I watched you tear up fields, I watched you break down houses, I'm out. You didn't find the money, and you two dum-dums aren't the first ones to think about this. Somebody buried that money. And somebody told us that money's been long gone, man. That money's been picked up and it's gone. And that's just the reality of it. So go do your treasure hunter things. But you could still have TV there. And they did. They succeeded. So to have the sit down interview with the gentleman, particularly after I would lay out the case, I mean, it would be pretty obvious. And I think this is, you know, ultimately what weighed into his decision of, look, this is what I know. And I've known you my entire life. You know what I know. And I am going to tell it. But I'm going to make sure you're compensated for that, and then you can tell your piece. It wasn't the most above board, hey, you walk away with $100,000 and everybody's laughing. Yeah, he knew this is going to come out, and no, I don't want to do it. And that's just the way that it went. But that has all been done in the last 2 weeks of my life. I mean, this is a very up-to-the-minute story. I did not know he was sick. I didn't know any, and then he went to sleep and he didn't get up. So there you go. That's it, man. That's all I got. But I guess I'm just sharing that with you because I had sent out a tweet. I sent out a tweet and a lot of people responded. Ben Askren was even going, okay, look, I follow the show. I've read the book. I know all the stuff. Will you just tell us who it is? It's like, well, no, I won't because, first off, the name won't mean anything to you, right? John Doe, what's that mean to you? And secondly, I mean, there's some sportsmanship here. He took it to the grave. He got away with it. It's the way it goes.
Yep, there you go.
Yeah.
It'll be a thing to his past now. We're still talking about it.
Yeah, but it is an interesting thing for me as well. I mean, it's major insight for me into the FBI, into the fact that it is highly paid and as highly trained as they don't know, but they do continue to put out misinformation and different stories. And they've contradicted themselves many times over the years. That's fine. People get it wrong all the time, even somebody as high up as the FBI. But it is very peculiar to me that they did finally pin it on a guy who they shot after he did a bank robbery, but they didn't stop investigating. You're still hearing things. Now, I'm telling you now, they don't know. They're not going to know. Any D.B. Cooper stories you hear, I mean, just chalk them up to have fun with it. The tie and the Boeing, and he must have worked at an airplane. Man, they have no idea what they're talking about. I could tell you this whole story from start to finish, everything that they don't know. And there's plenty of questions out there that they do bring up. And they go, well, here's the part we are a little confused on. Okay, that's fair. That's fair play because there is situation that you don't know, right? I could answer all of those questions. And I do find it a little bit troubling that they've never simply asked me, all right, what do you know? I wouldn't tell them. But if they're doing their job, they do contact me and ask, correct?
Correct.
Sure, of course they do. So there you go. Because, and don't forget either, this isn't the geographically, the head guy that's investigating this, that's been put in charge of DBQ before the FBI, is in Seattle. That's 3 hours from me. He drives up here. He tries to win me over with a Reuben sandwich and a Coca-Cola. I don't tell him anything, but he tries, right?
Right.
And then they put the pressure on Chael. Hey, here's what we're going to do. Right? They play the game. I've let it be known I'm open to the game being played. Never contacted me.
Sounds
but I'm a surprise.
Sounds like this is an invitation.
I believe I am. I believe I
just
am.
Just a little bit?
I'm acting to you as though I don't want anything to do with this. It's just something I came across. That's how I'm playing it to you. But you're right. You've seen through me. There's the other part of me is dangling a little something in front of them saying, don't you want to know what I know? Yeah, you're right. I am very much. You know what? Now that you've called me, I didn't think I don't know if I realize this about myself, but you analyze this correctly. I am enjoying being the smartest guy in the room. I am enjoying knowing something that they don't know. You're right. I'm busted.
Yeah. Now they're going to call you probably tomorrow. Tomorrow or the next day. You're going to get phone calls from the FBI.
And you know what? They're welcome to it.
And you're not going to tell them anything.
I would invite them to come on this show. We'll have this conversation on this show so everybody can hear it. What do you think of that?
I like it.
I think that would probably end the investigation. But it is very peculiar that somebody is collecting a paycheck from the FBI for who even knows how many years, 30 plus years, and they don't come to a guy that's been very vocal about, I know who it is. I mean, that is a little bit alarming, correct?
Correct. But can we be a little bit honest? Even after they talk to you, do you think they would honestly end an investigation?
No, I don't think so.
It's just too much fun.
Yeah, but the other side of that is they have claimed publicly a number of times that it has been ended. And then years go by and they're back on something else. And the tie, by example, the tie is the new thing. But yet they've pinned this on some other guy that robbed a bank many years ago. Before that, they pinned it on he never made it out. How would he make it out? To which I've rebuked right on this show. Okay, fine. He didn't make it out of the woods. He died in the fall. He died in the woods. Fair enough. But show me somebody in America that fits that description, even loosely, that went missing. If you're saying he died in the fall, oh, and we've never found him because of the bears and the coyotes and the wolves and all of the things of the terrain that go in that conditions of that climate. Case closed. It's over. Which is what they said at one point. Great. Just show me somebody's neighbor, son, coworker, friend that went missing at that same time. Could it happen? Could it happen? Because it didn't happen. He made it out. And I could tell you how. That's one of the big pieces is I could tell you how he made it out. And that's one of the big parts of how I sold this to the network that wanted that. That was the big part. That's the one where they go, oh my gosh, he's got him. But you're right. You're right. I am enjoying knowing more than they know, aren't I? Maybe that's why I'll never tell. Maybe that's really why. I'm sitting here acting like it's because of code of honor, but perhaps it's because I don't want it to end. I don't want the fact to end.
So you'd be okay if they never called.
That I know.
Yeah, you'd be okay if they never called and you're just like, that's fine.
Of course. Of course. As long as I can have like the high-handed position. I want my cake and I want to eat it too. I want to be the honorable street guy that doesn't give names all the while letting you know that I know the entire story. So what's that say about me? I don't know. Psychoanalyze that all you want. I don't know, but you have uncovered what my real motivation is, haven't you?
Yes. Yeah, This is fun. It's going to be funny to see what happens, if anything happens, too.
You want to know what's interesting? You and I have gone back and forth on some TV shows over here. And that was kind of just us talking, but it happened to be recorded. Kind of stuff I thought we should do on our own time. Maybe not tell the audience. Just you and I talking so that I can get a TV update. Well, people have really liked that, and people have been great, like on social media, reaching out to me with some suggestions, and I take those suggestions. So I got into this was a recommendation that came right to a text message from me from my boss, but he said, you know, try American Vandal. Don't read anything about it because you're going to think how silly it is, but try it. Worked great. It was incredible acting. It's a documentary style show where it's not a documentary. It's completely scripted, but it's filmed and presented to you as though it's a documentary.
Got it.
Could you imagine how hard that would be to act in, to read lines that are scripted lines, but your job is to act as though they're not scripted. This is just me talking and somebody held a camera up. So I really thought the acting from top to bottom was outstanding in that. Plus it's very fun. I'm going to leave it at that, and I would advise you, if you're going to take my pick, to do what was advised to me. Don't read anything about it, because it's very silly if you read about it, but it's presented in a very brilliant way. Got through that, and I went into one called The Ranch. Ashton Kutcher. Am I saying that right?
I think.
Kutcher, you know, the guy.
Kutcher.
Demi Moore or something. Demi Lovato, Demi Moore. He married that gal. And he did the You're Punked. He was punking people. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yes.
Ashton, yeah. Okay. So he does a show called The Ranch. It's on Netflix. It looked like it was filmed on the cheap, but after a couple of episodes, I found that to be part of its charm. And his father on the show is Sam Elliott.
Oh, that's fun.
Well, Sam Elliott's the man, right? Yeah, of course that's fun. And he's playing the perfect role. You know, some of Sam Elliott's greatest roles have been in Western movies. I mean, Tombstone comes to mind, just to offer you an example.
I'll tell you, my favorite role I've ever seen him in was We Were Soldiers.
Okay.
Vietnam movie.
But another one where he's a tough, stern character. I have seen
totally.
That.
Oh, totally. He was a tough drill sergeant.
So it's the same way here. It's the same way in The Rent. He's playing the role that he was made to play, which is that role. It's really good. I mean, it's really good. It's a little bit different, but I you know, Siskel and Ebert terms, two thumbs way up. So that's currently what I'm working on. Oh, I saw a movie the other day. This was recommended to me. This is an older film. I think it came out in 2015. If I'm wrong, it was even before that. Six Ways to Die. Have you heard about that?
I want to say I've heard the title once, but I haven't seen it yet.
Six Ways to Die. All I want to do is recommend it. I don't want to dig too much into it because I do worry that I could give something away. Incredible twist, really well made, Six Ways to Die. Bit of an action, bit of a gangster feel, but there's a message at the end. Not some powerful change your life message, but a definitely did not see that coming. It's great. And that's the best movies do have that. They got that little turn at the end. They got that little twist. They got that little extra surprise for you, a little treat that you didn't see coming. Six Ways to Die, I'd recommend that.
Kind of reminds me, just the way you're talking about it, of Seven. Have you seen that?
I've seen Seven, and I will agree with you. Seven was excellent.
Yeah.
I didn't love that ending. I mean, I will admit it was well-written and it was incredible, but I didn't leave there feeling good. I can tell you that much. I didn't leave theater with a smile on my face.
You're not supposed to.
But, well, I'm ready to get my day going, you know. Brad Pitt and company really cheered me up. No, I left pretty mortified, but 20 years ago was that made? I still remember that.
Yeah,
it's powerful.
Yeah, it's a great ending. No one saw it coming.
No one saw that coming. Man, we shouldn't see that, because that was a dick move by the writers, actually. There was other ways to do that, but not as powerful. They got away with it being powerful. All right, let's get into some real stuff here, man. My guy, Uriah Hall, fighting Vitor Belfort.
This
weekend. I like that fight, and I cling to some of the veterans because those are the guys that I was watching coming up. So I cling to those guys hanging in and fighting. But Vitor has said this is going to be my last one.
Well, that sucks.
Well, they dealt him from the bottom of the deck. Uriah Hall. I mean, you're talking about a stand-up fight. Neither guy has ever gone for a takedown that I can remember. If that's a literal statement, it just might be. I'm going playing it in my head right now. Yeah. Never. Never that I can remember. Neither guy. Wow. Stand-up fight. And you got Uriah Hall that is faster. I can't remember a time Vitor Belfort's ever been in a fight, and I've said that about his opponent, that his opponent's faster. I don't think I've ever spoke those words because Vitor's lightning fast. But so's Uriah Hall, and he's a little bit younger, which does make, you know, a little bit quicker. Definitely more dynamic. Uriah will throw everything at you. He'll throw his mouthpiece at you if he thinks it could stop the fight. I mean, everything. And Vitor is going to throw some hands. He's got some very powerful legs kicks, but he's going to throw those quick hands. And I think it comes down to who wants it more. I really think that. I think Uriah is the better fighter, but I think that the intangible of who wants it more, history would say the younger guy. History would say the poorer guy. History would say Uriah Hall. I would offer you one counter to that because I know my biasness towards Uriah Hall is oozing out of my mouth right now, but I want to try to be fair by disclosing my biasness towards Uriah Hall, but also to tell you this. Vitor's last fight. This is it. He said it. This is it. Farewell song. We'll see if he's telling the truth. I tend to think that he is. I really think that he is. Either way, let's concede that this is it for Vitor, and he knows it ahead of time. History says if you're a half a foot in and you're a half a foot out, you're all the way out. However, there are exceptions to that. Mark Munoz comes to mind. Mark Munoz was in a little over his head with Luke Barnett. Luke's a better fighter. But it was Mark's last fight, and he was dead set on absolutely everything I got goes into this. Goodbye, good memory for myself and my wife and my kids and my family. I'm going to go out the right way. He was dead set on it, and he overperformed. He looked great, but that was what he had for motivation. So there are exceptions. I offer you that for Vitor. A guy that's got a foot half out, if you want to go to a probability, you have to say, okay, probability is against him. The numbers are against him. Most guys like this are just kind of ready to be done and are going to walk out there and they're going to go through the motions and hope for the best. But when it's time to dig deep, they've already said, look, I'm doing something else. But there are those exceptions, and so we may see. And if I'm Team Uriah, and I am, I'm planning for the worst. I'm planning for the best and hungriest Vitor out there. Which, all the same, even a hungry and great Vitor against a normal Uriah Hall, I think it's a pretty bad night for Vitor. Uriah is just too damn crafty. But and there's a big but, you don't ever take your hand off that. You don't ever take your eye off that left hand of Vitor Belfort, because if it touches you, you're going to know it.
I would agree with that, except I'm going the opposite way. I'm taking what you say and saying, yes, I think this is Vitor's night.
Really?
Because of the matchup?
Are you even looking at the matchup?
I'm looking at the matchup. I'm looking at the mentality here. I don't see Vitor cashing out on before the night of the fight. Like, you know what I'm saying? I don't see him just saying, okay, last night, kind of giving it, you know, this is fun, enjoying the moment. No. I think he's just too good for that. He's too much of a tough guy. I don't think he just rolls over. And you did have a point saying best Vitor ever still has a problem against normal Uriah, but this might be just then some for Vitor, if you see what I'm saying.
It's a good talking point. It is a good storyline. I appreciate, if this is the end of Vitor, I do appreciate that he told us ahead of time. I don't hold anything against guys that take a little time and then announce their retirement. I'm just such a fan. You know, Sean Sherk did this. I really enjoyed watching Sean Sherk. Sean Sherk rode off into the sunset one day. He never even said goodbye. And it's like, Sean, for a fan like me, if you could have given us a heads up, I would have just enjoyed it more. Now, I'm being very nitpicky, right? Sean, that real human being with a real life, but I would have liked that. I'll give you another example, Rico Rodriguez. Rico Rodriguez has an incredible footprint in the history of this sport, but one day, he just stopped doing it. He never told anybody. He never made it. So we didn't get that final moment of, hey, let's sit down and let's really enjoy this. With Vitor, man, there's a presence there, and there's a history there, at least for somebody like me. I mean, I go back to his very first fight when he came out of his UFC tournaments. He stopped two guys in one night, the super fights with Tank Abbott, Randy Couture finally stopping him, the ups and the downs. I've just watched it all. So if this is the final walk, it means something. I guess I'll leave it at that, but it means something. As a fan, thanks for letting us know, and we'll make sure to tune in. Fortunately, you're fighting Uriah Hall. I'm going to have to cheer against you, but I will tune in. Right?
Right, exactly.
That's fair by me.
That's totally fair.
Yeah.
I'm just Team Vitor on this one. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah?
I expect a little more, because that's just the kind of guy he is.
Don't you feel a little weird telling me that when I'm telling you I'm all for Uriah Hall?
Well, it's kind of just setting up this right here.
Okay.
No, we'll find out next week.
All right. Well, even though you went against my guy Uriah, I'm going to do you a favor, Jacob. I'm going to tell you and everybody else how 30 seconds, this 30-second commercial, and I'm going to throw a lot of numbers at you, but please try to stay with me, because in just 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on your car insurance. This company has been offering great rates and great service for over 75 years. And anytime you need help, you can speak to one of their trained specialists 24/7. The company is, drumroll please, Geico. Go to geico.com today. Sorry for all the numbers. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I'm out of time. You knew it was Geico, though, right? I mean, come on. Who Geico. Else can save you 15% in 15 minutes?
No one but Geico.
One of the most, one of the greatest catchphrases in the history of marketing. Everybody knows that.
You saw the commercial where they were talking about coming up with that catchphrase, right? That was maybe 3 years ago.
No, I didn't.
It was like the CEO dude in the Gecko talking about catchphrases for their company. And he's like going through and he's like, Geico, now that's the stuff. They're the bee's knees. And then he's like, sir, why not just 15% or 15 minutes and save you 15% or more on car insurance? And the guy's like, what kind of market phrase is that? Good luck with that catching on phrase. That's it.
That's brilliant.
There you go.
They
poked fun at their own ridiculous marketing phrase that everybody knows.
I love it. I don't think there's been a time in my life, aside from the Super Bowl, because they put out all the cool commercials come out in the Super Bowl, I don't think there's been a time in my life where I would stop. If I had the choice to not watch a commercial, but I would watch it, I don't think I would ever choose to watch it. It could be a movie. It could be a special. I'm just not into it, right? Geico's that exception. You remember that one they had with the camel for Hump Day?
Yeah.
Hump Day?
Yes, I love that one.
The camel. It's a talking camel walking. walking through an office. You know they had to pull that? They had to pull that. I know this for sure. I was at UFC Tonight at the time. They were one of our sponsors. Go ahead.
Was it because of the? Was it because of Joe the Camel for the cigarette company?
No.
The cigarette ads?
No. You know what? Hump Day. So Hump Day means Wednesday, right?
Yes.
It's the hump day of the week. Well, apparently kids were equating that to some kind of a sexual content,
oh,
and they were going around
on.
Schools and saying, yeah, and I still don't know if that's a reason to pull. I mean, that sounds like it kind of caught on to me. But that's how they were equated. They were hearing something else. They were hearing something dirty. So they pulled it. And I know that to be true because they were one of the sponsors. Boom, they pulled it, and they said, that's why, hey, you can't air that anymore. I'm going, oh, you got to be kidding me. That was a hilarious commercial. People used to come in and they'd say it'd be Wednesday and they'd try to mimic the camel, go, hump day? And we all knew what they were talking about. You know, that it was a talking camel walking through an office.
And
that's
it made
so
you
funny.
Smile, and Wednesday's supposed to be the drag day, but it wasn't anymore.
They made a terrible thing into something fun. But they've been great at their marketing. You know, they've been great at their marketing. They said they've been over. The commercial has ended, by the way, just so anybody knows. But to talk about it, because I've been so impressed with this company. You know, Warren Buffett even got into that early, and he didn't get into it because it was insurance. He wanted to be insurance. He saw the marketing plan. He goes, wait a minute, you guys are going to come out with this strong in marketing. No insurance comes out this strong in marketing. You're going to make commercials fun? Yeah, okay, I think you have something there. And they did. They came out with Hump Day. They got a talking gecko.
Talking gecko, talking camel, the cavemen. There's that whole thing where it's like surprising. This isn't surprising. Like, their most recent one was like losing your keys, and was a space captain trying to fly out of their giant spaceship to a space battle, and he lost his keys.
Right.
And then the crew is like going over the whole ship intercom while there's a battle outside and they're losing desperately. And they're like, captain's keys. It's got a little dog keychain on it. And the captain's just sitting there tapping his foot. Yeah. Yeah. I lost my keys.
That's brilliant.
It was great.
There's another one. I can't think of what the company is. Oh, is it hotels.com? It's for a company, but their mascot, if you will, their spokesman is Captain Obvious.
Yes.
Is that hotels.com? It's something like that.
I think so.
Bookaflight.com, comewashmydog.com, whatever it is, but they got this Captain Obvious guy. So it's always something funny. Captain Obvious always gets made to look like a doofus while trying to be a cool guy in his outfit. Those are good, too. I like creativity. You know, for so long, companies and commercials thought that sexual innuendo was the best way to go. And it's like, man, that's played out. Go back to humor. Go back to something like Hump Day, where people walk into an office and go, Hump Day? I mean, that's fun. You know you've made it then. You know you've made
Apparently,
it.
Apparently, some people thought that was sexual innuendo, so whatever.
Yeah, I guess they did, didn't they? They combined the two.
Coming soon to Podcast One, Red Circle Sports with Dennis Miller. Get your weekend sports roundup every Tuesday exclusively from Podcast One and comedian Dennis Miller. He's going through and circling the most exciting headlines so you don't have to, and bringing you a lot of laughs along with them. Be sure to download new episodes of Red Circle Sports with Dennis Miller every Tuesday on the Podcast One app, Apple Podcasts, or at PodcastOne.com.
You're welcome. You're welcome with Chael Sonnen.
All right, what else do we got? Who else is fighting? You know, what are you making of this Volkan versus Cormier? Because let me tell you something. When that fight got announced, when that fight was talked about, not announced, when it was talked about, I brushed it off my shoulder instantly. Yeah, no, they're not going to put Volkan in there. Because with Cormier, and it's never a slide to Volkan. It always sounds like I'm sliding a guy, oh, he doesn't belong in there. I've had guys say it about me, man, it pissed me off, and I wouldn't try to slide him like that. But I'll offer you this. If it's going to be Daniel Cormier, you're fighting for a world title. If you're fighting for the world title, you're one of the guys on top of the bill. If you're on top of the bill, you're in charge of selling tickets and bringing in eyeballs, okay? You can't do that with Daniel Cormier. He's not a proven draw. As great as he is, he's not. He's only done good business two nights, and that was with opposite of John Jones. So Cormier's going to need a dance partner. Well, you can't do good business with Volkan. He's never done good business. So you're going to put the two together? I mean, you see the problem with the math here. So I just dismissed it. And it's nothing to do with his skills whatsoever. I just dismissed it, and I was quite sure I was right. Well, all of a sudden, Daniel Cormier gives him the golden kiss. Cormier comes out and says, you're the guy. Well, when the champions don't call people out. Champions get called out. When the champion does break that rule, that fight happens. When the champion says, you're next. You're next. So Cormier gave this guy the blessing, and boom, we've got a fight. I offer you that because it's interesting, my own psychology. I went from the fight's not going to happen, Volkan can't even get the fight, to I smell an upset. And I'm not sure how I got to the how does the guy – I smell an upset for Volkan when 3 months ago I thought he didn't even belong. But that's where I'm at. I don't offer you any analysis on that. If I was to break down the fight, Volkan, who's a great striker, Cormier, who's a wrestler, we've seen this since 1993, 9 out of 10 times, that favors the grappler. All I can tell you is a gut feeling. That's all I have. But something here feels like an upset.
Are you comparing this fight to like the similarities between a Jones and Cormier fight, just the most recent, because Jones was the striker?
No, maybe subconsciously, but no, I don't know that I did as much as, you know, Daniel is coming off a loss. He's had a foot out for a while now, in that, but he's just so good, he can get away with it. He's got the younger guy. I mean, Daniel should be able to tackle this guy and beat the hell out of him. That's what the analysis should say. Keep him down and pound him. Daniel gets hit a lot. He can just take a big shot. This is one of those fights where he's going to need to be able to take a big shot. I definitely think he's the better fighter, but something about it feels like an upset. And I'll tell you this. This is the elephant in the room that nobody seems to want to be talking about. But Luke Rockhold was Daniel Cormier's teammate from day one of Daniel's career. A year ago, Luke packs up and leaves, goes to Florida. Turns out he's in the same room as Volkan, training with Volkan every day. All of a sudden, Volkan thinks he can beat Daniel Cormier. It's like, okay, fair enough here, but who gave you that opinion? Is it your new teammate who used to train with him and now trains with you? Daniel Cormier thinks this guy's got no chance. Well, where did he get that opinion? Certainly he called his old teammate and 10-year friend Luke Rockhold, who he knows spars with this guy. So I wonder where Luke sits in this thing. Now, there's a chance that Luke just took the high road and said, guys, ask anything you want. I tell you nothing. I'm not blaming Luke in any of this, but it is the elephant in the room. If you're trying to build drama, hey, where does Luke fit into this whole thing? Because he sparred with both of you. He likes both of you. He's been teammates with both of you. Is he siding with his old guy or is he siding with his new guy? Or did he stay out of it?
Or both.
I don't
just
know the answer.
Or both to feed both egos.
Sure.
I can see that totally.
Yeah. I was in a situation like this. I was going to fight Michael Bisping, who trained with Jake Shields, who's a longtime friend and training partner of mine. I called Jake Shields. Of course I did. You know what Jake Shields said? I'm out.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I would have told you. I would have helped you. Anything you needed to know, but I just trained with him. So I'm out. Respected him to this day for that. That was the right thing to do. I did the right thing, too. I tried to get the information I could. I'm sure Bisping called him as well. But he told us, at least told me, if not told us both, don't ask me. You guys go figure it out. So, but where is Rockhold's part? I mean, let's start a little something there. It's very reasonable. Obviously, both guys have asked him, right? They'd have the right. That would be very smart for them, too, have access to a middleman. You've gone with me. You've gone with him. What do you think? I wonder what the answer is. And I wonder why nobody's asking Luke that question. Luke's smack dab in the middle of this thing. And everyone's acting like he's not, man. You got to be kidding me. You got Daniel Cormier's oldest teammate training with Daniel Cormier's next opponent. You're telling me there's not some drama there? You bet your ass there's some drama there.
Now, I'll ask you this. Is the code of honor, if you will, if you've sparred with them or if you've trained with them? If you're in the same gym across the room checking each other out?
Yeah, you know, I don't know that I know the answer to that. I would handle it the way that Jake Shields did and just say I'm out.
That's the easy and the most, like, okay, just let me out. That's the best way.
Yeah, now if you just cross paths with a guy, I suppose it could be a little bit different. I've crossed paths at some gyms. Been out at Randy Couture's gym. Spent some time. There's a big gym in Vegas called Syndicate. And, you know, I just popped in for workouts here and there, but it was a who's who, and I, you know, got a little feel of everybody. So I might be able to take that experience and then take it back to a current teammate, and that would be above board. And if the guys that I worked out with did that to me, that would be above board. There'd be no hard feelings there. So what is the code there? I'm not sure. I suppose everybody has their own, but...
Because I'm sure you guys...
Luke's in the middle of it.
I'm sure, though, you guys have talked to each other and said to other fighters about other fighters, I could totally beat that guy and the other guy. Yeah, you could. I'm sure that happens all the time.
Definitely.
But it's once it's official, it's like, I'm sure, though, there's been some talk between the two, Rockhold and Volkan.
Sure.
And then Rock and
Cormier. Oh, there
most
definitely has. And there's no wrong answer. The only time a guy might be looked at as a little bit of a dirtbag is if he played the fence. You know, if a guy came to me and I told him one thing, but then I went back and told the other guy too, and kind of played the fence. If a guy's real direct, like, say, Jake Shields was, where it's, hey, I'm out. Now, a guy doesn't have to be out. Maybe Rockhold goes, hey, I'm all the way in. I do know Daniel, and you are my teammate, so I'll tell you what I know. You've seen it. You've seen it on video, but I can share some stuff with I felt with you. But by the way, Daniel calls me every Sunday at 5, and we catch up. He's going to ask me this exact same question. And I am going to tell him that when you step outside, you throw the cross, even though it looks like you're going to throw a hook. Just letting you know. Well, that's above board, too. You could do that as well. I don't know what's being done there. I just know that Daniel's old number one training partner, Luke Rockhold, is now the number one training partner of his next opponent, and there's something there, and nobody's talking about it. And I'm curious, what is it?
We should ask him.
We should call Luke and ask him. Yeah. Hey, Luke, you playing the fence here? Because it's not Luke's fault. I mean, how would you like to be Luke and stuck in that spot? I got two guys, my current teammate, my old teammate, and they're both calling me. I want to be a good dude, but how do I do it? I mean, he's in a spot, too.
We should ask him.
There you go.
All right. Also, we got this weekend, in addition, is Van Zandt and our gal Van Zandt and fighting Jessica Rose Clark.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll tell you this. I don't know a ton about Rose Clark, so it's hard for me to break that down. But, boy, I train with Paige every day, twice a day. She's really worked hard. Her attitude's great. She likes the new weight class. It's less stress on her body, more focus on training. Those are her words. But I'm able to see it, right? The smile on the face, the attitude. I feel really good about her in that fight. And she's always in such great shape. You know, she's made for 25-minute fights. So in a 15-minute fight, and endurance is a huge part of it. You know, I'm just breaking this down on being in shape. But she is. As a fighter, you know, when you're leaving that locker room, you need to know that you have the gas to defend yourself the entire time. Huge part to the mental aspect, and it's something that sometimes fans don't fully understand because the announcers and the broadcast team are always talking about the punches and the kicks and the setup to this and the takedown ability and the submission. Man, it's conditioning. Conditioning comes in front of all of that. If you could have the best gas tank or the best right hand, you take the best gas tank every single time. So Paige has that. She is in incredible shape. She's in good spirits, and I can tell you I'm with her, but I don't know her opponent very well, so I can't give you a full analysis.
I'll be with you. I'm with Van Zandt on this one too.
Okay.
I've seen her plenty of times. I haven't seen Clark yet, but you're right. Let's not forget, she went 5 rounds with Rose.
Yeah.
She lost, but she went 5 rounds.
Yeah, she's tougher than hell. There's no question ever on her heart or her durability. She has been very open, and this was a while ago, but I can remember a fight a couple of years ago where she said, oh, that girl's just better than me. You know what? I think it was the Rose fight where she said, oh, she was just better than me. Offered no excuse, and that was it. And then her way of preventing that for the future is she started working a lot more on her technique and her technical skills instead of just the strength and the conditioning side. She kept that component, but she did learn in that Rose fight. It was very open and very objective about it, and she's changed a lot of things up. Her Muay Thai is unbelievable now, her submissions and her grappling. I mean, it's just stuff she focuses on every day. And that's all I can tell you. I'm sure there's plenty of compliments to her opponent, too. But I got some firsthand knowledge here of Paige, so I'll share that with you. You want to know a fight, and I think we're a little bit from it, but it just got signed. I don't know the date. We can come back to it. But Edgar Holloway got put back together.
Very interesting. You know, yeah, totally.
Edgar's my favorite fighter, but I've told you, Holloway just might be number two. And that's an attitude thing with Holloway. His attitude of anybody, anytime, stack them up, let's go. I don't duck anyone. I take on all comers. That's just so rare and so refreshing for me that's what's elevated him. So for me, yeah, I'm excited for that fight. And I also, you know, I was promised that fight like everybody else, but we were promised that fight and it didn't happen. A lot of times those guys are punished for pulling out of a fight for whatever reason. And a lot of times the landscape of the division changes so fast that they just never get that shot back. A lot of guys have had title fights and had to pull out, and it never got put back together. I was very happy that Frankie was given this shot. That's the fight to make. Max beats Frankie in many ways if you're talking about skills. If you want to talk about reach, you want to talk about speed, I mean, just those right out of the gate. You want to talk about experience, you're going to Frankie. You want to talk about wrestling, you're going to Frankie. You want to talk about power, you're going to Frankie. But it's a very interesting fight. You want to talk just pure striking? I really don't know. You know, I've only seen Max lay an egg a couple of times. He happened to win those fights. I mean, a bad Max is still damn special. So, you know, versus Frankie. Frankie's really only had one kryptonite, and that was Jose Aldo. So if you look at the math there, you're going to go, well, Frankie lost to Jose and Max destroyed Jose. Eh, it doesn't really work that way when you got a powerful guy like Frankie that can get inside. And to act like Frankie can just get inside and take down Max when you got a very precise striker with a reach advantage, it doesn't work that way. So it's a really compelling fight. You know, the younger guy who happens to be the champion versus the older guy who used to be the champion. It's a compelling fight.
And also, this is people would love to say the whole, you know, take three people and put them in all against each other. They love to see that 2-0, 1-1, 0-2.
Sure.
This could be that 1-1, everyone which way. And the only way, I mean, we saw Holloway and Aldo twice now. I am guessing, especially that it's since it's been put off so long, that this fight is going to be repeated very, very soon.
Yeah.
Very, almost maybe even right afterwards. Why not?
Yeah, and let's just see what happens. I mean, the division's changing. Brian Ortega is coming up, and I mean, there is some new blood, but you still got Frankie. And as far as just a straight stand-up, see, because I like what you said there about the round robin of Jose, Frankie, Max, and not necessarily one guy is going to come out on top. They could all beat each other in different ways. When you break down Aldo versus Holloway, what we all learned, it surprised us all, but what we found out is that Aldo was the better striker. I apologize, that Holloway was the better striker. He knew how to get to his target. He knew how to protect himself. He knew how to stay busier. He knew how to cage him in the fence. He knew how to go to the body, come back up to the head. That surprised us, but that is what we learned, and we learned it twice. With Frankie, Frankie has a totally different specialty than Aldo does. So you do have a totally different fight, at least in theory. So I could see a definite scenario where they do all beat each other, where Frankie beats Max, Aldo beats Frankie, and Max beats Aldo. Let's see. We're gonna have to see it. I understand you're dealing with a young gun here and a big stud and all that, but with Frankie's skills, for me, I was told I was going to get that fight, and I'm happy that we are going to get that fight. I guess that's all I'm saying to you for right now.
And it's about time.
It's about time. There you go. You got any final thoughts?
How are you feeling for your fight? It's getting closer.
Yeah, I'm feeling good, not great. It's let's see. This will be the final hard work, final week of hard training. And I definitely can tell I'm looking forward to some rest. By tradition, I take 3 days completely off before every fight. I mean, I'm talking about boredom. I'm miserable. I'm laying in bed or sitting on a couch, forcing myself, watch TV, not move, just total rest. That is a suggestion I was given from Mike Dolce. And it was given years ago. I took it and I went with it. For this fight, I think that I will only get Saturday, Sunday. Generally, we travel on Tuesday. My travel day, because of some media obligations, is going to be Monday. So it's going to cut down on one of those days, which is fine. I think I can recover in 2 days. I'm getting a little wordy here, but you know, you asked me how I'm feeling. So I'm putting the work in. The time is there, but I'm a little ran down. I'm not quite as sharp in practice right now, just because I am showing up fatigued and sore and tired, and I am looking to recharge and then go into fight week.
Let's do this then.
Let's do this. We got no choice, man. Diplomacy's failed. Me and Rampage are going to have to fight. Guys, don't buy a car without TrueCar. Take this advice from me. Most people are saving $4,000 off of the MSRP. It doesn't matter if they're buying new or they're buying used, but here's what they're doing. They're going to TrueCar. If you're on a smartphone, you can go into your search engine right now, download the app. TrueCar, download the app. If you're at a desktop, www.truecar.com. When you're ready to buy, go in virtually from the comfort of wherever you happen to be. Type in the year, the make, the model. Type in your zip code. It will tell you what people in your area paid for that exact same car. That becomes your price. And again, most people are saving $4,000 off of the MSRP. You will virtually be connected with a TrueCar certified dealer. You guys will work out the price. You'll work out everything. Okay. When you get to the lot, your car is guaranteed to be there. Your price is already set. You're going to save time. Use TrueCar. All right. For Jacob. Thanks for listening, everybody. We had some fun today, didn't we?
Oh, yeah.
For Jacob, I'm Chael, and until Friday, hold your heads up high. You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Hey, this is Jim Litke, host of AP Sports Weekly, where we harness the shoe leather, insight, and experience of some of the smartest reporters in the business to bring you the news. I've been an AP Sports columnist since 1989 and covered every major championship around the globe multiple times and crossed paths with some of the greatest athletes of our time. And now I'm excited to bring you a weekly recap of the most interesting happenings in sports. So make sure to download new episodes of AP Sports Weekly every Tuesday on PodcastOneSports.com, the new Podcast One app, and Apple Podcasts.